Hello, everyone. Welcome to Inconvenient Truths. I'm your host, Jennifer Zeng. While Americans were celebrating Thanksgiving this past weekend, unprecedented protests broke out throughout China. People are directly demanding the CCP and Xi Jinping to step down and asking for freedom. This is something that has never happened since the 1989 Tiananmen movement. So what are the differences and similarities between the 1989 Tiananmen movement and what is happening in China now? Will the CCP crack down on this movement too? How will the protests end? Today, let's discuss these questions. First of all, let me give a short overall summary of the protests. On November 24th, a fire broke out in a high-rise building in Urumqi, Xinjiang, in China. This city has been under lockdown for months. Because of the lockdown barriers in this area, the fire truck couldn't get inside this area. Instead, the firefighters had to spend a lot of time removing the barriers. There were also a lot of cars blocking the driveway of the fire truck. Some of the owners of the cars were under lockdown. The batteries of the cars were dead, even though the owners were there. So the cars had not been driven as the cars had not been driven for months. See this picture? This is how close the water spread from the fire truck could get. It didn't reach the fire at all. Let's watch a video to see how far away the fire truck was. Well, the girl who recorded this video was saying that the water doesn't reach the fire at all. Don't they realize this? When the fire happened, the doors of the residence were locked from the outside like this. So they couldn't escape. The next video is very upsetting. It shows the last desperate screaming of the victims before they were burned to death. Well, imagine you have to scream for hours before your last breath. The CCP admits that 10 people were killed during the fire, but local residents say at least 44 people died, including a 3-year-old child. This extremely terrible tragedy soon sparked a nationwide protest. From Urumqi to Shanghai, from Wuhan to Beijing, from Guangdong to Sichuan, from Nanjing Media College to Peking and Tsinghua University, big and small sizes of protests broke out in at least one-third of China's provinces, or more than 50 cities and 100 universities and colleges. Not only that, Chinese students in other countries such as the US, the UK, Canada, Australia, and Japan, etc., have also been protesting in front of the local Chinese consulates or other places. See, this is a poster for an event at Harvard University today. According to the information we can gather from social media platforms, the protests first appeared at universities in China. At Nanjing Media College, two students held a piece of blank paper and stood there for a long time until it got dark. Then more and more students joined them. At the beginning stage of the protests, There were still people holding a sign such as, "You know what I want to say," or with a fragment equation to express the pursuit for freedom. But soon, holding a piece of blank white paper with nothing on it became a common practice. Like this young lady at Tsinghua University, even the picture of Xi Jinping was covered with a piece of white paper. This man in Neijiang City in Sichuan Province used white blank paper to form the Chinese characters for freedom, 自由 in Chinese. So this wave of protest soon got a nickname, 白纸革命 in Chinese, which means blank paper revolution or white paper revolution. Some people also call it the A4 revolution. I've shared dozens of videos of the protests in the past few days on Twitter. However, I dare not show them here as YouTube might limit my video again. See, both of my last two videos were limited by YouTube because I included protest videos in them. So please go to my Twitter account and let me show my Twitter account. Jennifer Zeng 97. Jennifer Zeng 97. Every day I tweeted a lot of information about what's happening in China, videos, photos, and some of them are very astonishing, like this lady. There was another big high-rise building on fire, and this tragedy happened to her. Not so very similar to what's happening in Urumqi, and the victims in Urumqi even didn't get a chance to escape, like this young lady who was killed in the fire. This is another tragedy during the zero COVID lockdown in China. So if you would like to get the fastest information and updates on what's happening in China, please follow me on Twitter and Jennifer Zeng 97. Next, I'd like to talk about some of the characteristics of the protest. Number one, the abruptness. For many people, even China watchers who have been following very closely what happens in China, such as myself, this round of protest broke out very abruptly out of nowhere, and in a very short time, it spread very widely. Number two, the extensiveness. As I said earlier, so many cities and universities participated. Number three, the participants come from all walks of life. Actually, before the protests sparked by the Urumqi fire, the migrant workers of Foxconn already fought back, as we talked about in our last show. This time, university students, middle-class people in big cities, and long-time elderly democratic activists all participated. Number four, the pursuits of the protest evolved very fast. Initially, people mainly gathered to express their sympathy and mourning for the victims of the Urumqi fire. But soon, the pursuit rose to the political level and people directly demanded the CCP and Xi Jinping to step down. The scene of hundreds of people shouting together, "CCP, step down, Xi Jinping, step down," is quite stunning. Something like this has never happened before. Apart from demanding the CCP and Xi Jinping to step down, crowds also demanded freedom of expression, rule of law, democracy, and votes. So these protests are no longer only for some special issues or some special rights, but for a system change, for freedom, rule of law, democracy, and votes. This has never happened before either. Number five, the movement is decentralized. There are no leaders, no set locations, no coordination or orchestrations. The protests are mostly spontaneous. Number six, protesters are no longer fearful or no longer as fearful as before. I was very impressed by a young man in Shanghai who held flowers in his hand and encouraged the onlookers to be braver. There was another young man who said to a reporter in Japanese media that he could be accused of being utilized by hostile foreign forces if he did an interview with a foreign media outlet. However, he still wanted to do it, even if his effort was as useless as a mantis that tries to block the way of a cart. He still wanted to make an effort. Perhaps after three years of lockdown, people find that nothing is more dreadful than losing your freedom. So they are no longer as fearful as before. Number seven, protesters are very creative and come up with many different ways to protest. Holding a piece of blank paper is a symbolic way of protest. Students at Peking Film Academy simply displayed a lot of bloody masks to say that the CCP's zero COVID policy is a bloody one. And some hackers simply released the personal information of all the police officers who participated in the crackdown on the protesters. The other day when I was interviewed by Times Now in India, the host asked me to do a comparison between the protest in 1989 and the current one. The biggest similarity is, of course, the scale of the protest and their widespread influences. And they are both efforts of the Chinese people trying to gain more freedom and rights. But the differences are also huge. The biggest one is, while in 1989, the students didn't oppose the CCP and only wanted the CCP to reform more to crack down on corruption this time. People are directly targeting the CCP's political system, and Xi Jinping himself, as they have realized that all the tragedies are caused and created by the CCP. If the CCP doesn't go, there is no point to ask for just one specific right. Also, the context of the times in which the CCP exists is also very different. In 1989, the reform and opening up policy of the CCP had just started not long ago. Although people suffered a lot from Mao's Cultural Revolution, it was ended by the CCP itself anyway, and some of the mistakes were corrected, and some of the injustices people suffered were readdressed. So people were still full of hope that the CCP could choose a better way for China and the Chinese people. But now, after decades of the so-called reform and opening up, people realized that although China had become the number two economy in the world, the wealth was in the CCP and CCP officials' pockets. The majority of people didn't gain that much. Especially after 3 years of inhumane lockdowns, many people have either lost their livelihood or their hope for the future. Everyone could see that Xi Jinping was taking China back to Mao's time. So after Xi Jinping successfully gained his third term and became virtually the emperor for life, people became more despaired. As for the CCP, I think it is running out of its legitimacy very quickly. After the communist ideology went bankrupt, The only legitimacy that remained for the CCP was the fast growth of GDP. Now that is gone after 3 years of stupid lockdowns, and the international environment for the CCP has completely changed too. So this is the time and challenges the CCP and Xi Jinping are facing. They are running out of time and legitimacy. The next question is, how will the CCP respond and how will the movement evolve? Will the CCP be ended soon by people's anger and protests? During the first 2 days of the protest, we didn't see much response from the CCP, especially from the central government of the CCP. Local officials were doing different things as how they saw fit. Then gradually, we saw leaked information about how the police were instructed to check people's cell phones and have their personal information registered and sent to the big data center if any so-called illegal apps such as Twitter, YouTube, Telegram, etc. were found in their cell phones. And we also saw videos of police checking people's cell phones in the subway or on the street in Shanghai. As for the universities, the university presidents were called to a meeting and told to let the schools close early and send all the students home so that they cannot gather together in the campuses and cause trouble anymore. Then, today, the CCP's mouthpiece Xinhua published a report saying that the CCP's Central Committee of Political and Legal Affairs held a meeting yesterday, that's November 28th, and stressed that we must resolutely combat infiltration and sabotage of hostile forces. We must resolutely prevent and curb major events, etc. You know, the function of the CCP's Committee of Political and Legal Affairs is to especially suppress people. Apart from the head of the Central Committee of Political and Legal Affairs, the CCP's police head, the head of the Supreme Court, the head of the Supreme Procuratorate, were all at the meeting, and the report especially mentioned this. So, this is a sign that the CCP will use the Iron Fist method again to crack down on this movement and to find out and then persecute those who participated. In the meantime, the CCP is heavily censoring online speech and content to make it hard for people to spread the truth and organize themselves. There are also rumors that the CCP could even cut off the internet, electricity, or even water entirely if necessary, or impose complete lockdowns, or even martial law in certain cities. Judging from the CCP's previous behaviors, I think all these are highly possible. The CCP never backed down when encountering resistance from the people in the past. So there is no reason why they should do so this time. So is there no hope that the people will win? Definitely not. Like I said earlier, the CCP is running out of time and legitimacy very quickly. The pressure in the high-pressure pot has accumulated to such a high degree. Even the CCP is trying to release some of the pressure using different methods for the time being. It will build up back again soon, and the pot will explode one way or the other. So it won't end well for the CCP. Instead, it could be very well the beginning of the end for the CCP. Well, that's how I look at this issue. Please leave us a comment to tell us what you think. If you are new here, please subscribe to my channel. If you are already subscribed, please like and share my content and check if you are still subscribed. Also, if you could, please go to my website at jenniferzengblog.com, jenniferzengblog.com, to sign up for membership or make a donation to support my sustaining effort. Thank you. See you next time.